Hi, everyone. Welcome to Ground Crew, November 29th. It's a Tarmac Tuesday. We're coming off a very big win the other day against the Bears. We're still on a high, myself and Johnny, and probably everybody else listening to this podcast, and everyone in Jets Universe. Speaking of Jets Universe, as always, reporting from Jets Universe, Johnny Jets.
Hello, Jets Universe.
Hello, Johnny. Good to see you as always. Appreciate you joining me. Let's get right to it today, my man. Let's talk about, well, Mike White's the big story, of course, and we're going to talk about him, but we're going to kind of set this up a little bit differently in how we want to talk about him. Because the other day we spoke about how he got on the team, how he became part of the organization, this now being his fifth year, but we didn't touch on another guy who was supposed to be maybe a bigger part of the organization as opposed to Mike White. And it was interesting that Mike White is the one who stayed on the team and made it all the way through, because going back to the now infamous, and that's the right word to use about it, 2020 draft, is the 125th pick that Joe Douglas made. Do you remember who that was?
That's quarterback James Morgan.
Captain, right? Captain James Morgan. Not something to just eschew and say, oh, is the 125th pick. You know, he wasn't Mr. Irrelevant. It wasn't a sixth or conditional seventh rounder. That's a fourth round pick. Just a couple after we took P. Ryan, another guy who's off the team now. But, you know, there's something to be said about that. When you take a guy like that, you're expecting him to be part of the organization. You're probably expecting him to be a backup, you know, for a while. He's your guy that you're going to pay, you know, small bucks to on that rookie contract. But you feel comfortable about him backing up. But that was 2020. And as we know, it was September 25th of 2019 that we picked up Mike White and put him on waivers. Okay, so it was the year before. He had already been on waivers nearly a month, right? Because I believe the Cowboys cut him. I think it was, we talked about this, August 31st. It was nearly a month later that we picked him up. Joe Douglas saw something in him and kept him around through this. As the following year, he was competing with Morgan, essentially, through training camp. And it was really, you know, it was White, essentially, who won. Because when you talk about 2021, that's when Morgan was waived. You remember who picked him up, by the way?
No, I don't recall who picked him up.
Immediately, it was Carolina. Interestingly enough, we played Carolina. I mean, this is still, you know, this was Zach Wilson's first game. We had played Carolina, probably picked him up because he had some intel to give the Panthers on the Jets. You see that happen all the time. You know, his journey, let's just go through it. After that, he then went to the Pittsburgh Steelers. He actually came back to the Jets. I don't know if you remember this, but Morgan spent a little more time, another 6 days in November of 2021. Then he went to the Colts for the remainder of the season. And now he's a USFL guy, potentially Zach Wilson's future, but playing for the Pittsburgh Maulers. But here we go. Mike White has remained. Mike White is the one all the way from back in 2019 who has stayed. I mean, what do you make of this, right? That White is
just to quickly comment on James Morgan. I can't disassociate James Morgan from that 2020 Joe Douglas draft, which is just disastrous for the most part. The fourth round, you can get a serviceable lineman, certainly a backup lineman, offensive lineman, and likely a starting guard of some sort that can play for you for, you know, 6 to 10 years. To take a flyer on a quarterback who, you know, the word on James Morgan was that he had a gun for an arm, but then just jettison him, no pun intended, so quickly, is just another admission of failure about that 2020 draft.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it. And by the way, speaking of guards, do you remember who it was we drafted after Morgan, the next pick?
Tell me.
Cam Clark, we wish him well. I mean, he was potentially somebody who was going to be a staple on the line. Obviously, you know, he was injured and it was pretty severe, pretty serious, and we certainly wish him the best. But, you know, again, interestingly, to your point, especially this now 2020, which is a disastrous draft, but it's so far in the rearview mirror at this point. Because you're talking about Douglas, who whiffed on that fourth rounder and impressively, and I want to give him credit here, was able to move on, because a lot of guys wouldn't otherwise do that. When they pick their guys, they want them on the team. They want to stick with them as long as they can. But, you know, he got rid of P. Ryan. He was willing to get rid of a Jonathan Marshall, who he drafted just 2 years ago, in the sixth round, and take better linemen. And he got rid of Morgan and he kept with White. You know, White was showing something. I mean, again, he had this vision to pick him up off the Cowboys and work with this guy for a number of years until now. I mean, he ended up becoming a starter. And again, we're going to talk about it in a second, but I want to stick with Douglas for just one more moment here and hear a little bit more on, you know, your thoughts on this. Here he is on Morgan, and obviously with what we know about Wilson, who's probably not going to see the field again, even though Saleh's been telling everybody and he stood up in front of the media. And I want to say, I think he said the right thing, the way he said it, that the goal is to get Zach on the field later this year, although we know not the case, but he said the right thing. But this is not going to necessarily stick to Douglas, this whiff on the number two pick and certainly the whiff on Morgan, if White pans out or the Jets keep winning. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, everything works out if you have a starting quarterback. Mike White has demonstrated in his first start in 2021 and now his first start in 2022 that he's a starting quarterback in the National Football League. And, you know, without the consideration that Zach Wilson was the number two pick overall in the 2021 draft, I don't think there'd be any dispute about the fact that Mike White is the Jets quarterback. But the fact remains that Zach Wilson being the number two overall pick by Joe Douglas, they're just not going to give this job, at least for public consumption, to Mike White. I don't know what more needs to be seen or done. I don't know what sort of work needs to be done with Zach Wilson's footwork or lower torque or whatever kind of nonsense that they are. It's coming out of one Jets drive out in Florham Park. Zach Wilson is a bust and he's not going to get better. And Mike White is a fully formed starting quarterback of the National Football League. The Jets teammates love him. And in the driving rain on Sunday, he got the job done when Zach Wilson blamed the wind in Foxborough the week before for not getting the job done.
Hey, you don't get the moniker Mike F and White, you know, for nothing, right? You're going to have a lot of teammates who love you if they're going to bestow that upon you. Sauce had to earn it. Mike definitely earned his. But yeah, I mean, to your point, and this notion, I love the fact that you call him a fully formed quarterback, specifically because, of course, what was everybody saying? Hey, we just need this guy to be a game manager. Just come in and manage the game and do it for us and all of this. I don't think you let any game manager throw 20 times in a half like they did. And that's exactly what Mike White did in the driving rain, nonetheless. And he completed 16 of them, as we know. And we all know how good he looked in that first drive. And I think what was something interesting is I listened to a lot of football podcasts this previous week around the league and a lot, you know, some Jets podcasts, but the ones not specific to the Jets, they forget about him because what they wanted to say about Mike White was, yeah, he came in and he was in that Cincinnati game and he won that amazing game. And then he looked terrible. Not so, because as we recall, what ended up happening is Indianapolis, he got hurt. But in the first part of the game, I thought he looked pretty fantastic, right? And he made a great touchdown throw to Elijah Moore before he got hurt. And unfortunately, had to get taken out of the game. And then he came back probably too early and had to play against Buffalo. And that's the game he looked poor in. But again, not a game manager. And not the game plan with a fully formed quarterback. And why should he be with potentially one of the best 1-2 punches at receiver in the league? Let's talk about them for a little bit. First, I want to hear your thoughts.
I just want to interject by saying that game manager doesn't necessarily mean that you have limited ability and there's only certain things that you can do. I think at heart, what it really means is that you're not the reason that the team loses the football game. In other words, you don't get in the way of your teammates winning the football game, right? So Mike White has demonstrated that he can throw the ball down the field, that he can throw crossing routes, that it's not just a matter of handing the ball off like Bob Greasy 39 times a game and throwing five passes. You know, when 1979, when Joe Montana fell to the third round because they felt that he did not have great arm strength. And maybe he didn't, but it didn't matter because he was able to run that West Coast offense with the talent that he had around him. You know, and there's all these critics coming out, detractors of Mike White, saying that, you know, he doesn't have the arm strength. He doesn't have the NFL ability. The analytics say that he can't be a starting quarterback in the National Football League. But to your point, in 2021 against the Bengals and in the first part of the Colts game before Mike White got hurt, the eye test demonstrated that Mike White can do all of the things that you need to do to be a winning quarterback in the National Football League. And then, of course, Josh Johnson came in, ran the LaFleur offense in a way that Zach Wilson was unable to do even in the last year and a half.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to your point about that, and not just the LaFleur offense, but the Shanahan offense, I think that, the notion of game manager is that you are a game manager, and you're not going to be throwing the ball downfield and you're not going to be averaging 11 yards like he did this last game. You're supposed to hand the ball off. You're supposed to get it out in quick shots to your running backs, either handing the ball off or quick outs, or try and set up just yards after catch. And they want you throwing 20 or less times a game. But again, to me, 20 times and a half, I just don't think that that's even a conversation piece. I don't think that this notion of game manager is anything. He's a quarterback. He's the starting quarterback. And if he's got to throw 25 times, 35 times, 40 times, and we talked about this in one of the earlier episodes, like any quarterback should, because again, that's not necessarily your game plan and you're not scheming for it, especially if you want to be a running team and you want to be the Shanahan offense. But if the kid's got to do it, then he's got to do it. And he certainly has the ability to do it. And I think a lot of that speaks to his receivers. And I wouldn't even want to think about him being a game manager. And that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about his receivers. I mean, let's really delve into Wilson, who is now, I mean, you watch that game and yeah, that second touchdown safety fell down, but he's transcendent. That's the only word I could think of. And there are so few guys going back in Jets history who have this ability, to just pop out on the screen and as twitchy as he is and yards after catch stuff. But Moore, who was just as good this year, is now has this opportunity to come back and showcase his abilities. Let's hear your thoughts on it before I'm going to delve a little bit deeper on some of the tandems in Jets history, the 1-2 punch, because we can't forget about Corey Davis and we can't forget about Mims. But, your thoughts on Mike White and what he could do for these two guys.
Well, for those two guys, and not just for those two guys, I mean, Mike White hit 10 receivers on Sunday. I mean, that just demonstrates not only his ability to distribute the football, but also to go through his progressions when the first read's not open, to go to the next read, the read after that, and to make the plays. But more specifically, mm-hmm. to your point about Garrett Wilson and Elijah Moore, yes, the defensive back fell down on the long touchdown that Garrett Wilson scored. It's possible that that player was the latest victim of the turf at New Giant Stadium, which has claimed so many victims, and apparently he's going to be replaced next year. It would be very, very unexpected if, in fact, it was the case that Elijah Moore just lost the ability to play football this year. He had a quarterback that was challenged in Zach Wilson that wasn't getting the football to him, and that defense were able to game plan such that they were able to limit the Jets' offensive passing game, and that limited the amount of targets that Elijah Moore was getting. Now with Mike White, Elijah Moore is getting the football, and Elijah Moore's demonstrated that once he gets the football, that he's definitely a playmaker and he has to be addressed by the defenses. By doing so, that frees up space for Garrett Wilson and for the other receivers on the team, of course, as well.
Yeah, I love it. I love everything you just said about that. But I want to, like I said, I want to go a little bit deeper. Obviously, there's still Corey Davis, who, is somebody who can stretch the field, wins the 50-50 balls. And Mims, of course, who's doing a wonderful job blocking these games, especially for the running backs. And that we know how key that is. But he still has that insane athletic ability that pops off the page, and he can win the 50-50 balls. And he's going to be a big part of just one or two plays a game that make a difference. But talking about these guys, Wilson and Moore again, I'm trying to wrap my head around it. I'm thinking back in Jets history, going back to call it the Super Bowl, or probably from 69 on. Of who we've had as wide receiver tandems. And here's who I've come up with, and maybe you can add a few more or just hear your thoughts on it. But, going down the line, Krabet probably had the best run with a few guys on the 1-2 punch. And we all know, Krabet was playing above and punching above his weight his entire career, but it was Keyshawn and Krabet. Keyshawn had two great years, of course, and then he wanted off the team. A little bit of Coles and Krabet, a little bit of Santana Moss and Krabet. But I don't think you can compare those three regimes to what we have in Wilson and Moore. I mean, it's just unfair how much better Wilson and Moore are and can be. And then after that, I'm thinking about Santonio Holmes and Braylon Edwards for a couple of years, right? When Sanchez was throwing them the ball and probably felt the same way about Moore having Wilson throw him the ball. And then who? Maybe Altoon, Wesley Walker? Because, Don Maynard, of course, probably the best receiver in Jets history. I'm not even sure who was on the other side of him, and I didn't bother looking it up. You just hear about his name. But, yeah.
It'll be George Sauer Jr., who was one of the great football players in the AFL history.
And you're right, by the way. I shouldn't be just, eschewing him because he is a great Jet. and all that. But obviously, Don Maynard is the name that jumps out at you. I mean, anybody I'm forgetting? Any tandems out there?
First, I want to say that it's to me, it's farcical to consider any great wide receiver tandem where Chad Pennington is the quarterback. Chad Pennington couldn't throw more than 10 yards on a line. So all of these, like, you know, short throws where he would throw to the receiver and then it would get yards after catch. I mean, yes, those are technically receptions, but I don't think they're any kind of historic, you know, quarterback receiver achievement. And the fact that the Jets drafted Santana Moss in the first round of 2001, a speedster, perhaps the fastest player in the whole draft, to play with a quarterback who can't throw the football down the field, you know, that was just abjectly dumb by the Jets in 2001. That's not a knock on Santana Moss's ability. It's just the fact that Chad Pennington could not do anything for Santana Moss. But to go back to your question, I think if you look at Richard Todd and Wesley Walker, and also Rich Kastor, who was there for a few years, you know, those tandems in terms of receivers. Yes, when you had Wesley Walker and Al Toon with Ken O'Brien, those were two great receivers and a quarterback who could throw the football. The knock on Ken O'Brien is not that he couldn't throw the football his first couple of years before he got that massive hit in Cincinnati and then, you know, was afraid to play football anymore. It was the fact that the Jets did not take Dan Marino and let him be taken by the Dolphins, who had just been in the Super Bowl, to face the Jets for the next 15 years.
Yeah, and we know what he did for Duper and Clayton, two guys you're not necessarily going to hear, you know, in the annals of wide receiver history, although they were fantastic. And as a duo, they were tremendous, especially for Marino. But we're talking about Wilson and Moore. We're talking about a rookie and a second-year guy who have potential to have this long history after this. Because who knows what happens with Corey Davis? Who knows what happens with Denzel Mims or Berrios or anybody else you want to put? But to me, Moore, who could play the slot and the outside, and the same thing with Wilson, then they're interchangeable, and you put them in the X, Y, and Z, it doesn't matter. They're incredible. Their ability is off the charts. And just having somebody competent like Mike White out there throwing them the ball, it just pops at you. It popped in the Bears game. And I don't want to hear any of this that the Bears aren't good or, you know, they played a team on the decline and their quarterback wasn't in and all of that. That's ridiculous. You still got to go out there. This is the NFL. I don't care. I mean, it's not like they're the worst team in the NFL or it's not like they don't have guys or they're fielding eight men out there. I mean, it's tremendous who Wilson and Moore are. And if it's Mike White thrown to them, that's great. I'm just beyond excited about what this tandem can be.
Right. To your point, I mean, they've demonstrated the ability with Mike White, a competent, I'll call him a very good quarterback, that they're able to demonstrate their talents on the football field on a national, on the NFL level. It just shows just how detrimental Zach Wilson is to their ability to play football, that they were so limited all of this season by Zach Wilson's, you know, inability to be a starting quarterback in the National Football League. Now you simply replace Zach Wilson with Mike White, and all of a sudden, you know, not only Garrett Wilson, who, you know, you would expect that from, you haven't heard any kind of words from him that he wants to be traded or anything else like that, or that his head's not in the game. But even in Elijah Moore, even though he came out and requested a trade, even though he expresses dissatisfaction with his not being targeted, you know, Mike White starts, Elijah Moore is ready to go. His game, his head is in the game. He's demonstrating on the football field that he is a star in this league and that he can be an important part of this Jets offense moving forward for years to come, as you so eloquently put with Garrett Wilson.
Yeah, Wilson is twitchy and as good as it gets. And to me, Elijah Moore, Mr. Separation, he's out there giving you 2+ yard cushion. And if Mike White's throwing the ball in under 2.5 seconds, that's going to mean a lot of good catches, a lot of yards after the catch, and some touchdowns on his side of the field. Okay, moving on.
I just want to say, because Jets Universe has been going on since the beginning of time, just for the, you know, for the old folk in Jets Universe, if Garrett Wilson, Elijah Moore can be as good as Don Maynard and George Sauer Jr., then the Jets are going to be one heck of a football team.
I appreciate you correcting me and coming at me a little bit for not bringing up George Sauer Jr. Because you know what? You're right. The man deserves some credit. He was there at a time when the team was good and he was good. So my apologies to George Sauer Jr. and the family. Moving on. Michael Carter. How big of an injury is this if we don't have him for the Minnesota game or any game moving forward?
You're talking about the running back, Michael Carter.
Yeah, not okay. our
well,
slot cornerback.
Zonovan Bam Knight had a great game on Sunday.
Yeah, not unexpected, by the way. I think a lot of people were banging his drum early in the season. Get him on the field. Let's see what he could do. And you notice he was there, you know, taking the kickoffs as well. And Berrios just had to field the punts and do what he does. But, yeah, I mean, Zonovan Bam Knight was pretty damn good. And Ty Johnson, by the way, who, as we recall, if you go back, was kind of, you know, was the guy who was playing at the time because of some injuries last year, and he was a big part of that Cincinnati game. He's a great yards after catch guy. He had a tremendous run and showcased his ability for that touchdown when he did it. But that's who we've got. We got Bam Knight, James Robinson, Ty Johnson. I mean, that's still some great depth. I mean, really good credit to the team. I mean, if you're losing your 1-2 punch, a lot of teams would go down without Hall and Carter. But these three guys, especially, again, going back to the type of offense that we run, should be able to go on in there and make a big difference. So I would agree with you. Not a tremendous loss. And it was interesting that James Robinson was a healthy, inactive scratch for the game, specifically because they like the way that Knight runs. But still, with those three guys, I don't think we should have too much drop-off, do you?
No, I don't. And also, it also speaks to what you established earlier about the fact that Joe Douglas is not afraid. You know, he made the trade for James Robinson. He invested a draft pick in getting that player. And now that player is a healthy scratch. I don't know whether he has the same first name as James Morgan, but Joe Douglas has demonstrated that he will either sit a player or just get rid of a player if he feels it's in the best interest of the New York Jets.
Certainly loves James. Certainly loves a lot of guys who have the same last name as well. That's kind of been a running theme for the Jets for the past couple of years. All right. Rivka Board over at Jets X Factor. I thought she did an amazing job, wrote a great article about Robert Saleh just the other day, and she called him the right guy at the right time. That's what the article really spoke to me as. And, you know, his brand of football and what he's bringing, because he's essentially steadying the ship. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago as well. And I'm so glad she wrote this article because it's all about quelling the drama. And that's what I think Saleh brings to the table. He's done an amazing job, steady hand, doesn't waver, brings the optimism, and has quelled the drama that always follows the Jets, always pontoons an organization like the New York Jets, always puts the stink on us. And he is like, I don't want to hear it. I don't care about guys getting hurt. I don't care about quarterback controversies. I don't care about two of my receivers, not one, two of my receivers in the same year asking for trades who are still on the team and now making major contributions. How much credit does this guy deserve? 7-4.
Well, he does get credit for steadying the ship, but he's also responsible for the unsteadiness of the ship from time to time. You know, Robert Saleh has not been the perfect coach during his tenure as the New York Jets or even this season. And the fact that he did not bench Zach Wilson in favor of Mike White at any point during both of the Patriots games, which resulted in losses, and if inserting Mike White into either or both of those games would have resulted in another win or two, which would have made it more likely for the Jets to make the playoffs this year or even win the division. You know, that's not being a steady coach. That's creating unsteadiness. But in terms of, and he's not the first Jets coach to say that this whole same old Jets is now dead. I mean, that goes back, that's, you know, forever. I remember Rex Ryan on his first day saying it's not the same old Jets anymore. Yet at the, you know, the end of his two first seasons when they lost in the playoffs, you know, the Jets came away as not being the champions of the world, which Rex Ryan had predicted that they were before each of those beginnings of those seasons. Okay, so same old Jets only ends when the Jets win the Super Bowl. Jets fans are like Yankees fans. It's either win the Super Bowl, win the World Championship, or the season is an abject failure. So Robert Saleh has not proven anything until he wins the Super Bowl. Now, is he the worst coach the Jets has ever had? No, he's not. Has he seemed to be one of the better coaches that the Jets have ever had? He does. But this decision about not benching Zach Wilson earlier, and I don't even know whether it was Robert Saleh's unilateral decision or not. It's quite possible that he did not have the decision-making authority on that point. But he was the public face of the franchise who said after the second Patriot game, it did not even cross my mind to bench Zach Wilson during the second Patriots game. He's the one that's got to take the hit for it, for making that statement. And he created the problem. Now he's addressed it. And now he's coming out and saying, well, you know, Zach is going to get back on the football field sometime this season. It's a day-to-day, week-to-week, minute-to-minute, you know, evaluation or whatever. I don't know how that flies with Jets universe. You know, as long as Mike White is winning football games, you got to go with Mike White. I don't see how Zach Wilson ever plays a National Football League game as well as Mike White has already demonstrated that he's played in multiple football games.
Yeah, I mean, and look, it's fair enough to feel that way. I'm not ready to go there. I certainly don't want him back, you know, anytime soon at the helm. Mike White, notwithstanding, I'd still rather have Flacco over Wilson at this point. I think anybody would, or even, you know, elevate Streveler if we're going to go in that direction. You know, Zach's got a long way to go, but he's also potentially has a long career ahead of him, whether that's on the Jets or somebody else. So don't want to take that away from him. But during your diatribe, during all of that, you'll notice, obviously, I put up on the screen a wonderful article you put up yesterday to kind of go along with what you were saying. And you put it up on LinkedIn, your social media platform of choice, that you're putting it on Saleh at this point, that the Jets are not going to make the playoffs. Surprise, surprise, long-suffering Jets fan Johnny Jets says the Jets are not going to make the playoffs. And this is Saleh's fault already because he didn't pull the string and he didn't take Wilson out. And he started him both of those Patriots games. And you're saying that we're not making the playoffs. Is that really how you feel already? And it's already a foregone conclusion because Saleh put Wilson in both of those games?
Well, my point is that it's almost certain that the Jets are not going to make the playoffs. It's very, very difficult at this point because of those two losses to the Patriots, both of which were winnable games, both of which Zach Wilson demonstrated certainly by the fourth quarter of both of those games that he didn't have it those days, that he could not move the football, he could not get first downs, he could not put points on the board for the Jets when they needed them. Robert Saleh knew what he had in Mike White, that Mike White was a competent football player, competent quarterback, and come in and could score points and win those games for the Jets. Now, because of those two losses, those aren't just divisional losses. Those are AFC conference losses. Okay, so not only the obvious, the fact that the Jets don't have two wins, which they otherwise would, and therefore that cripples their ability to win the AFC East. Obviously, winning the division, that's an automatic playoff bid. Now, they don't win. If they don't win the AFC East, then the only other option is to become one of the wildcard teams. And because of their conference record, they already have four losses in the conference. They have more than any of the top nine teams that are vying for the playoffs right now. They are in. They lose all the tiebreakers to all of the teams that they're competing against, most specifically the LA Chargers.
Let's pause for a second there because I want to get into that. And you're absolutely right, but we're going to pull up a couple of graphics on the screen so we can kind of go through one by one. But before we get to that point, and you brought up some great points about what they're up against, but there are two things that go in their favor as we head down to the rest of the season. And one is they're playing some of the worst pass defenses in the league. And that's huge because if you got Mike White in there and you've got these two incredible receivers now, well, if you got three others, you can really complement them as well. And some really good running backs who catch the ball out of the backfield, you know, that bodes well for the Jets' success. The toughest team in the secondary they've got to face are the Bills, and even they haven't had the greatest year because they've got two incredible safeties who have been one off the field for the entire year and the other up and down and just hasn't been healthy all year. Milano included, not as healthy as he was, certainly in that mid-linebacker position. But everybody else we have to play really does not have a good secondary. And it's interesting because if you look at some fun charts out there, the Jets almost by a mile for the rest of the season, the next six games are so far ahead of every other team who has to play any other team, you know, in who they have to play secondary wise. It really bodes well for them. And number two, Rich Samini, am I saying his name right, by the way? Or, you know, the great cover man over at ESPN. Rich
you Samini, are, I believe you are. Yeah.
Yeah. In the ESPN power rankings today, the Jets are 6-0 when they score at least 18 points. And that's not something to just discredit. But we're going to pull up now some graphics and we're going to go through this because, you know, really.
Before we get to that, it's my belief that the Jets need to win at least 12 games to make the playoffs. So what is your view, having analyzed the forthcoming games and also the Jets competition, their remaining games? You know, how many victories do you ultimately see the Jets winning in 2022?
I see them winning somewhere between 10 or 11, and I still see.
I don't see that. I don't see that as being enough to make the playoffs. But please go on.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to figure this out because here we have, there's four teams left that we're up against, I think is fair. And I'm not including the Bills and I'm not including the Dolphins here. We're going to talk about them a little bit, but, you know, not that I was worried about them until, but obviously last night you can forget about the Colts. They're not a threat anymore. And I don't think anybody else in the AFC South, because every other team, but essentially four teams need to run the table, right? I'm including the Jaguars, I'm including the Browns, who we obviously hold the tiebreaker over them, and we're going to play the Jaguars, and as long as we take care of business, not a concern there. But everybody else basically has to run the table just to end up 10-7 and have their shot, except for the four teams we're going to talk about. There are the Bills, of course, who we expect to make the playoffs. There are the Dolphins, who we expect to make the playoffs. And then we're going to start with this team in front of you. Do you know whose schedule this is? You're reviewing. You're thinking about it. The hamster wheel is spinning. I could see it. A couple of cobwebs. We got.
I'm seeing all of the AFC North there, so it's not an AFC North team. Yeah, please tell me.
That's the Ravens. Okay. The Ravens, who, in my opinion, were already a lock, but no longer are because they're only one game ahead of the Bengals, who they still have on the schedule. That's who they have left. Not a tremendously hard schedule, though. Okay. Right. And we know, and to your point, and you brought it up, obviously the Ravens and the Bengals, they hold the tiebreaker over us, and that does not bode well. But I still see, you know, there's an opportunity for this team to fall away, even though they probably won't. The thing about the Ravens, though, is their defense with Roquan Smith is so much better, but clearly shows it's not perfect because the Jaguars just beat them, although they do have an easier schedule here. The Broncos, who are terrible, and they get them, you know, in Baltimore. The Steelers, who we know, just aren't good, and they're fading away. The Browns, Deshaun's back. We'll see what's going to happen. You never know what's going on in the interdivision. The Falcons, obviously, they aren't that good. But then you got the Steelers and Bengals again. I mean, this is an interesting, you know, second or the last six games for the Ravens. We'll see ultimately what happens with them. But, yeah, they're who we're up against. I think that they are going to be in the playoffs, and I still think that they win the division. Your thoughts on them?
Well, I mean, the likelihood based on the record of the other teams in the divisions that either the Bengals or the Ravens are going to win that that division. But my question remains, there's six games left for the Ravens. The Ravens are 9-7, correct?
No, I mean, at the moment, they're 7-5.
I'm seven sorry, and, seven and five.
They're 7-4, just like we're 7-4.
All right. Yeah, I mean, the Jets would have to have a better record than the non-division winner in that division, whether it's the Ravens or the Bengals, because both of those teams have the head-to-head competition tiebreaker against the Jets. So,
well, and to your point, and this is our next team here, and this is the Bengals, okay? But interestingly enough, you know, again, I think the Ravens win and win the division, and I'm pulling for them now to win the division because that's who I want to run away with it. It's really this team, the Bengals, if we're going to talk about anybody who has the ability to fall off and not make the playoffs, even though they're playing very well. They get Ja'Marr Chase back this week, and they just want a gargantuan game against Tennessee this weekend, as we know. But this is not an easier schedule by any stretch of the imagination, right? The Chiefs, who are 9-2 at this point, and they're looking to keep the train rolling, you know, and, you know, they get Cincinnati at home, and the Chiefs haven't been great on the road, but they're still winning these games. You know, that could be a big, big loss and put us back in the driver's seat if they can go down to the Chiefs this game. Then you've got the Browns, and again, interdivisional rivalry, it's not always easy, and the Browns are getting Deshaun back. All of a sudden, you might see some serious mojo out of that team. You might see a major pickup in the second half of the season, you know, or these last six games, when a guy like that comes back and takes over. You've got to go at the Bucs, who are going to be fighting at that point for their life because they just had a huge loss in overtime against the aforementioned Browns, okay? You've got to go at the Patriots, again, fighting for their lives, and it's never easy to go to Foxborough. I don't care who you are. You've got the Bills, okay, at that point, who are absolutely going to be vying against Miami to be in first place of the AFC East, and they're not giving up an easy game. And then, of course, your last game of the season, you've got the Ravens. I mean, I look at this Cincinnati schedule, and why I think the Jets have an opportunity to get in over them is just looking at these six games. Your thoughts on that?
So if the Jets win 10, go 10-7, that means the Jets finish 3-3, right? So you're saying that the Bengals would have to go 2-4 in order for the Jets to have a better record than the Bengals.
That's exactly okay. I mean, what I'm it's certainly looking at the schedule. It's possible
It's certainly possible, but it goes back to the point that if Robert Saleh had put in Mike White in the fourth quarter of one or both of the Patriots games, then we wouldn't be viewing these schedules.
But it happened, and I want to remind long-suffering Jet fans out there, we've got to put that in the rearview mirror. We're looking at the six games ahead of us here. Okay, which brings us to, you know, the dreaded Patriots. Okay, this is an interesting schedule that they've got left. We're one game ahead of them, as we know, and that was a huge, huge loss to Minnesota the other night. Now they've got the Bills on Bills on Thursday night. They've got to travel across the country at Cardinals, at Raiders, two teams who they're out of the playoffs, and you know, but they're playing for pride at this point. They're playing for looking to be a better team. You know, you've got Hopkins back, you got Browns back, you've got Kyler Murray, who, you know, has a lot to prove in the second part of this season. You got the Raiders. They've got a lot to prove to themselves and everybody else that, you know, it was just a fluke the first half of the season that they lost all these close games and that they could be a lot better of a team. And the next part of the season, we know how incredible Josh Jacobs has been at running back. You got the Bengals who are fighting for their life. And that, again, that's a big game for the Jets, that the Bengals have to play the Patriots, and who are we going to end up be rooting for at that time? And then they finish, you know, with the Dolphins at home and then at Bills. Do you see the Patriots, you know, putting together the wins necessary, because they've got to go.
I never count out the Patriots.
What's that? Johnny, say that again.
I never count out the Patriots. I never count out the Patriots.
No, no, nor should we, but they're 6-5, obviously, right? I mean, I look at their schedule, and it's very possible that, you know, they go 3-3 with this schedule the rest of the year, and that's not getting it done, because you got to win at least 10 in this year, obviously, to make the playoffs. So, again, I never count them out. Belichick's still the best coach of all time. He figures out how to get it done. But, again, looking at their schedule, looking at what they've got, what they're up against, especially, you know, three games still in our own division and two of them against the dreaded Bills, who have a lot to prove. And I want to say something else about the Bills. The Bills at this point, they've kind of gone through their midseason lull, because they're a team that was expected almost to go 15-2 or maybe run the table. And it feels like they've gone through their midseason lull. And I would be very nervous, including us playing them, you know, for any team that's got to go against them, of what this is going to look like, the last six games of the season. To me, they're going to go 5-1 or 6-0. So, you know, two of those games being against the Patriots bodes very well for us. And then finally, this last team, the Chargers, they just had to do it to us, didn't they? Because speaking of the Cardinals, I mean, they won on an absolute last-second touchdown and then a last-second two-point conversion, and good on them for going for it. But, yeah, their schedule is interesting. It's not hard, but there are obviously some interdivision games on there. And, again, you're playing for the pride. These teams love to play muckraker. They love to get in there and take out their interdivision guys and don't let them get to the playoffs. So interesting schedule here, but I also see them, because they just really haven't been great at all the second part of the season. They can easily go 3-3 here. Your thoughts on this?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's certainly true that the Chargers can go 3-3. I think it's also the case that the Jets can go 3-3. If they end up tied, then the Chargers would have the tiebreaker over the Jets. I mean, to me, I'm looking at it from the perspective, I appreciate all of this data that you're presenting, and certainly from analyzing things like the Jets' pathway to get into the playoffs as a wild card, these are all legitimate points. And is it true that there is a possibility for the Jets to win less than 12 games and still be a wild card if the other teams in contention beat up on each other and fail to win as many games as the Jets? That's certainly true. But for me, it starts this Thursday when the Patriots play the Bills. I'm rooting for the Patriots. I'm rooting for the Jets to win. I'm rooting for the Jets to win the AFC East and not leave it up to any other team's performance down the road.
Nor should we. But like I said, and here's something interesting. I just want to say what you just brought up, that if the Chargers go 3-3 and the Jets go 3-3, the Chargers have the tiebreaker. Not so. The Jets at moment are ahead of them by a game as well. They are only 6-5. So if they end up 9-8, which is a distinct possibility for them, the Jets are in if they win 10 games. And the same thing for the Patriots, right? Because then we're really just looking at both the Bengals and the Ravens. And if the Bengals make it because they're the better team, that's fine. And the Ravens win the division, that's fine. And then you're looking at the other wild card, either being Miami or the Bills, if either of those teams win the division. But to your point, I'm looking for the Jets, just like every other Jets fan, to run this table and not be 3-3 and certainly not be 2-4, but to be 4-2 or even 5-1 at the end of the season, win the division outright, take care of business, and show why Mike White was the right decision. Okay, let's bring us back in here. We'll remove this from the stream and take a couple questions, and we'll end the episode here. Greg Parvis asks, can our fan base enjoy success for 5 freaking seconds, or do we always have to bleep on ourselves even when we're winning? Long-suffering Jets fan, Johnny Jets, why don't you field this one for us?
Well, I mean, historically and currently, there's always two halves in Jets universe. There's a long-suffering half, which I am part of, and then there's the rose-colored lenses other half. You know, the rose-colored lenses part of Jets universe, they don't feel any pain. They don't feel any suffering. It's always the refs blowing the call. It's always the other team getting the breaks. It's always this, that, the other thing, which we would have won except blah, 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 blah. And then in long-suffering Jets universe, it doesn't matter what happens. When we're bad, we're bad, and the season's bad because we're bad. When we're good, the season's worse because it gets strung out. Like we're in the middle of this season where we're just going to get somewhere. Even if we get to the AFC championship game, even if we beat New England on the road in the divisional round and then show up in Pittsburgh and don't play at all, completely unprepared, humiliated. We should have lost in New England. It would have been better. A colossal failure. It's even worse than going 1-15 or 2-14 or 4-13 or anything else like that. So the question is, there is a substantial part of Jets universe that is able to enjoy themselves and enjoy life. And then there's the other part of Jets universe that can't and never will.
Greg, let me answer your question in short, since Johnny couldn't. No, we cannot enjoy our success even for 5 seconds.
You don't know any, you don't need it. You don't know any optimistic Jets fans. I do. I can't stand them.
You're talking to one, pal.
Oh,
all right. Last question, and then we're going to wrap this up. Jessica Brooks wants to know, can you give my man, or not even a question, but yeah, it is. Can you give my man CJ Mosley the love he deserves? Yeah, I could absolutely give CJ Mosley the love he deserves. He is back to all pro form, baby. And the fact that he is has been huge for us this year, because now we've got one at each of the three levels on defense. You got Quinnen in the middle, who's just been just unbelievable, as we know, should be leading all defensive players to get into the Pro Bowl. And then Mosley, you know, who really, it hurts my heart because I think about what he was in that Bills game before he got hurt that first year that he came to the Jets. I mean, he was incredible for three quarters. He was everywhere. He was a nightmare. He was a menace out there. And then we lost him for the year, and then we lost him to COVID, and he had to come back, and he had to get back into shape. And he's not the same guy. He's a little bit older, and we know he's not that great in coverage, but holy cow, what he does on the field and showing it this year, he is absolutely all pro. I give him all the love in the world. He is the heartbeat of that defense when you've got an off-ball linebacker like we have. He's making plays everywhere. Someone did an incredible job on Twitter just yesterday, I thought, showcasing the Bryce Huff sack and how that was really credited to CJ, because the way he crept up the line and made the right tackle have to account for him when Bryce came off on the get up and got that sack. I mean, CJ's been everywhere. He's doing everything, and he runs that defense, man. He is the Mike linebacker, and he gets it done. Your thoughts, Johnny?
Yes. Not only can CJ Mosley get the love, but now that CJ Mosley has a quarterback that he and the rest of the defensive unit does not hate, they actually have a quarterback that they actually like and love in Mike Effing White. CJ Mosley is going to play even better, and the rest of the defense is going to play better as well. Let's love CJ Mosley because they love Mike White.
We're going to end with that. This has been back in the hangar. We're getting refueled. We're working on it. We'll be back for Flight Plan Friday, this coming Friday. This is an interesting one. I just want to say about this coming Friday, I'm actually going to be in the motherland. I'll be back in New York myself. We all know I'm an LA guy, born and bred in Westchester, but out here, but over 20 years in Los Angeles. But I will be back in Manhattan. So a little bit different look coming this Friday and what it'll be. I'll probably be in a hotel room. I won't have the green screen behind me. We'll see how it looks. But hey, Johnny, as always, appreciate you joining me. Appreciate everybody else listening. This has been NYJ Ground Crew. Thanks again, Johnny.
See you, Jets Universe.